Good evening. After Russian troops entered southern Lithuania overnight, German Chancellor Peter Tauber has announced consequences. We now turn to his televised address.
Fellow citizens, since this morning, we have been facing a new and serious situation. After the invasion of Ukraine, we are now witnessing for the second time an act of Russian military aggression in Europe, against our freedom. And this time, the target is our NATO ally and fellow EU member, Lithuania.
When a German chancellor addresses the nation, the situation is serious. Olaf Scholz did so on February 24, 2022, the day Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Angela Merkel did so in March 2020, when the COVID pandemic brought public life to a halt. And Gerhard Schröder used such an address in 2003 to explain Germany's opposition to the Iraq War. In the war game, it is now October 28, 2026. In the early hours of the morning, Russian troops entered Lithuania. They have occupied a corridor roughly 65 kilometers wide, the only land connection between the Baltic states and the rest of NATO territory. And the worst-case scenario has become reality. The crisis had been escalating step by step. After a large Russian-Belarusian military exercise, thousands of Russian troops remained stationed near the Lithuanian border. At the same time, hybrid attacks targeted both the Baltics and Germany, including cyber attacks on Germany's savings banks. The German government responded by sending warships into the Baltic Sea, ordering Bundeswehr exercises in Lithuania, and activating emergency mechanisms designed to keep the state functioning during a crisis. It was not enough to deter Russia. At night, Russian troops crossed the border. A quick reminder: all developments in this war game are fictional. The news broadcasts were generated with artificial intelligence.
We condemn this military aggression in the strongest possible terms. The federal government is doing everything in its power to restore peace and to ensure that you can live in safety.
The address is meant to reassure the public, but it cannot hide the fact that one central question remains unanswered. Are the Americans prepared to defend Europe in this crisis? My name is Carolina Drüten. I am the international security correspondent at the German media outlet Welt. This is Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO? Inside a German war game. Episode 3. Emergency Powers. At the end of Episode 2, Team Russia took advantage of the fact that the American position is vague and at times even contradictory. They decided to speak directly with the Americans. The US president is unavailable at the moment, so the Kremlin calls the Secretary of State instead. And for that conversation, the Red Team has prepared a strategy.
That's where we need to focus in particular, on driving a wedge between the United States and Europe at this critical moment. What are the specific points we want to raise?
That was the Russian foreign minister. The Russian president and his military chief respond.
We will start off by thanking the American side for its efforts to achieve a ceasefire in Ukraine.
I'd immediately cast them in the role of mediator. I would emphasize that this should be a bilateral process. Above all, we should stress that we see the United States as a mediator, not as an active party to NATO.
The three men on the Red Team have to put themselves into the Kremlin's shoes. They have to think like the adversary. In that logic, great powers decide the fate of smaller countries. That is why the Red Team wants to strike a deal with Washington, over the heads of the Europeans. Ideally, at a summit bringing together the Russian and the American presidents.
And of course, the agenda will focus on new peace architecture for Europe and on bilateral economic relations.
The plan is set. The Russian president picks up the phone and calls the US Secretary of State.
Hey, Mr. Secretary.
The Russian president gets straight to the point.
So we would re-energize the process of rearranging the European security architecture with the US participation.
Step by step, he works through his talking points. He does not treat the United States as part of NATO, but as a power in its own right. And he makes the American side a concrete proposal.
We are happy to welcome, like, let's say, 30 unarmed US monitors to be embedded there and to have ability to monitor that human rights are not violated and so on. We are totally open for that. We are really looking for a solution here.
If the Americans accepted it, they would not be acting as Lithuania's ally, but as a neutral mediator on the ground. But the US Secretary of State does not take the bait. In the war game, he is played by Jeff Ratke, a former US diplomat and NATO official. He is sitting in Washington, D.C.
He may be quite reluctant to send American troops, whether it's observers, whether it's unarmed or armed.
Instead, he makes clear that the United States views Russia's move critically.
There is extreme worry about the presence of your troops in Lithuania. It is something that we can't ignore.
What really matters, however, is what the US Secretary of State is not saying. He is not drawing any red lines. He's not demanding the immediate withdrawal of Russian troops. And he is not threatening any consequences. The truth is, nobody knows how the United States would respond in a crisis like this. But Europeans increasingly have reasons to believe that America might not come to the rescue if worse comes to worst.
Donald Trump says he's strongly considering pulling the US out of the NATO alliance, unhappy with the reluctance of some members to join offensive operations in the war with Iran.
The Trump administration is making cuts to what it contributes to NATO.
Washington plans to slash key US deep strike capabilities on the continent by half, raising fresh questions about NATO's readiness and America's long-term commitment to European security.
How far are you willing to go to acquire Greenland?
You'll find out.
For years, Washington has urged Europe to take greater responsibility for its own defense. Under Donald Trump, that message has become much more explicit. The National Security Strategy published in November 2025 states that, quote, "The days of the United States propping up the entire world order like Atlas are over." It then lays out America's regional priorities. First comes the Western Hemisphere. Second, Asia. Above all, China and the Indo-Pacific. Europe only comes after that. Against that backdrop, it is not surprising that the American Secretary of State reacts cautiously in our war game. What's more, Europe's crisis comes at an awkward moment for Washington.
These actions by the Russian side have put the United States in a very uncomfortable position.
In the war game, it is late October 2026. The United States is just days away from the midterm elections. At a time like this, domestic politics tends to dominate the agenda. As the call comes to an end, the Kremlin leader reiterates that he wants to speak directly with the US president. Then he hangs up.
I'm looking forward to speaking to your president. Take care. Bye-bye.
The red team is pleased that the Americans have not taken a clear position.
Very good, very good. Yes.
During our simulation, only a short corridor separates the red team, the Kremlin, from the blue team representing the German government. The US Secretary of State is in contact with both sides. He speaks not only with the Russian president, but also with the German chancellor and foreign minister. They join a confidential call with the Polish prime minister and the NATO secretary general. At the heart of the conversation is one question. Will the United States support invoking Article 5, NATO's collective defense clause? Lithuania, the country under attack, wants it to be triggered. But for that to happen, all NATO allies have to be on board.
Good morning.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Here, too, the US Secretary of State makes it abundantly clear where the US stands. Washington is determined under no circumstances to be drawn into a new war in Europe.
People are raising all sorts of concerns about whether the United States is going to get wrapped up in a conflict that, frankly, we thought had been addressed several months ago.
The German foreign minister pushes back.
But it's crystal clear that we're under attack.
The Polish prime minister sees it the same way. In the war game, he is played by a security analyst, Bartłomiej Kot, who joins the discussion from Warsaw. He calls for a firm response to Russian aggression.
Poland will stand on the ground that peace can only be preserved through strength and willingness to escalate from the Russian side can be avoided only if we sound clear towards the Russian side.
The NATO Secretary General is equally concerned by the American position.
From what I understand, a lot of American troops, at least in Eastern Europe, may not be available. They are on standby to be redeployed to the Western Hemisphere at a yet unclear time.
When we designed the war game, the future of the American military presence in Europe was already uncertain. That is why we deliberately chose not to factor US troops stationed in the Baltics into the simulation. Since then, events have moved in that direction. The rotational deployment of more than 1,000 US soldiers in Lithuania has ended. Unlike previous rotations, no follow-on force has yet arrived, as Washington reviews its military posture in Europe. In the war game, the NATO Secretary General now tries to make clear just how serious the situation has become.
I was just out briefing the media in the last few minutes, and I can tell you that most of the questions I got were, what are Russian troops doing in Lithuania? Are they already on the territory of Lithuania? Is this an Article 5 situation? And is this World War III?
That is not at all what the US Secretary of State wants to hear. First, he says,
we are not in World War III.
Second,
we don't want to do anything that might call into question the work to create a broader basis for a constructive relationship with Russia, including economically.
And finally,
more sanctions, that's something that we've got to be very careful about.
The United States agreed to convene the North Atlantic Council, but refused to treat the meeting as an Article 5 consultation. No collective defense. No immediate consequences for Russia's actions. In effect, NATO is deadlocked. The call comes to an end. Let's briefly take stock. Russia has invaded part of Lithuania, thereby attacking NATO. The alliance has defense plans for exactly this kind of scenario. NATO's Supreme Allied Commander Europe, better known as SACEUR, has the authority to reposition forces and raise their level of readiness. But there is no automatic military response. To actually put those plans into action, a political decision is required. And, as we've just heard, that decision has not been taken yet. After his call with the US Secretary of State, the NATO Secretary General and the Polish Prime Minister, the German Chancellor sums up the situation.
It seems to me that the Americans want to turn this conflict into a purely domestic European issue.
The foreign minister comes to the same conclusion.
We have to let go of the idea that the United States will, in the short term, be willing to even engage in a discussion about invoking NATO's collective defense clause. So we must prepare for the fact that the necessary deterrence and solidarity with Lithuania will have to come from us.
And the compelling question that now arises for us is, how do we respond within the scope of our capabilities, both within the alliance and at the national level?
The blue team is now convinced of one thing. They cannot wait for the Americans. they begin discussing how Germany should respond to the Russian attack. You'll hear more about it in a moment. But first, let's step back into the neighboring room. That's where the Red Team is planning the next phase of its strategy, to render Germany incapable of acting.
When it comes to Germany, it's best to stick to the tried and tested strategy of carrot and stick. The carrot is mainly economic, including the resumption of cheap energy supplies.
That's the Russian foreign minister. In other words, Russia is looking for internal divisions it can exploit.
We can exploit a whole range of vulnerabilities in Germany to achieve our strategic objectives. At the top of the list is the desire to resume economic cooperation and energy imports. There is strong lobbying for this, particularly in parts of Eastern Germany's business community, and to some extent within the government. This is where we can drive a wedge.
The Kremlin is wasting no time. Team Russia offers Team Germany talks on what they call a peaceful solution to the humanitarian crisis in Kaliningrad. On Russian state television, aimed at an international audience, it sounds like this.
This is Report from Moscow. The Kremlin has proposed talks with Germany to address a humanitarian crisis in Russia's Kaliningrad region. Moscow accuses Lithuania of blocking transit routes, cutting off supplies of food, medicine, and basic goods for civilians.
You may remember this from the scenario leading up to the war game. In the months before the escalation, Moscow repeatedly tried to lure Berlin with economic incentives, cheap gas contracts, and investments in Eastern Germany. The offers were aimed at politicians from the far-right AfD, the left-wing BSW, but also at voices within Germany's governing Social Democrats. Germany is almost always governed by coalition governments, where different parties have to find common positions. Within those parties, opinions on Russia, sanctions, and military escalation can differ. Our war game does not recreate the exact composition of the current German government, but it does reflect that political reality. Around the table sit politicians from Germany's main governing parties, bringing different instincts and priorities into the discussion. As the crisis deepens, those differences begin to matter. The foreign minister, played by Social Democrat Michael Roth, addresses the issue.
Since August, we've had this absurd proposal from the Russians on the table, offering us cheap energy. And you know that the usual suspects in Eastern Germany are already starting to say that we may have to seriously consider it. And by the way, Mr. Chancellor, that's not just people from my own party, but also from yours.
Similar calls exist in real life. Last November, for example, Michael Kretschmer, the federal minister of the Eastern German state of Saxony and a leading politician in the center-right CDU, argued that Germany should resume buying Russian energy once a ceasefire in Ukraine had been reached. In the war game, the Russians have laid a second trap.
Then there is the second proposal to expand economic cooperation and ease sanctions. I think we need to send a very clear no. I know that's not an easy position to take, even within my own party. But we have to make it clear that in light of Russia's escalation, we are not prepared to even consider it. But to do that, we finally need to resolve the problems within this coalition.
The Chancellor calls for unity.
We must also stand up to those voices within our own country that are calling for us to back down. I would highly welcome us acting much more as a unified front in a situation like this.
The discussion then turns to another question. Would additional sanctions have any impact on Russia? The Interior Minister raises the issue with the Chancellor.
We urgently need to discuss measures that could actually put pressure on Russia. And that brings me back to the question of frozen assets. What do we do about them? And what additional sanctions should we impose?
I'm somewhat lacking the imagination as to what further sanctions we should come up with, given that the ones that we have put in place so far haven't yielded the desired effect.
That's exactly why I brought up the frozen Russian assets. I know this isn't without controversy within our own coalition. No, it really isn't. Perhaps you should ask your own party about that.
I would be interested to hear the finance minister's opinion on this matter.
It's well known that the government as a whole supports the idea of using the frozen Russian central bank assets. But as you all know, we're currently stuck at the European level because Belgium, where these assets are held by a private company, Euroclear, is asking for guarantees from other EU member states so that it doesn't have to carry the financial risk alone.
The idea of leveraging Russian assets is not new. The EU originally planned to use these funds as a loan for Ukraine. However, Belgium feared that Russia could later sue for damages, leaving a single country liable for the financial risk.
We're talking about roughly 190 billion euros in frozen Russian assets. Under the usual EU burden-sharing formula, Germany would be responsible for about a quarter of the guarantees. That's close to 50 billion euros. We would have to at least inform the budget committee. Politically, I think it would even require a decision in the parliament.
The core Russian assets remain untouched to this day, with aid to Ukraine being financed through joint EU debt instead. In any case, Germany cannot decide on its own what to do with frozen Russian assets. But the Blue Team agrees that Russia must face stronger economic consequences, despite opposition from within their own political parties. The foreign minister now takes the floor.
We really should push to finally end all energy ties with Russia. We should discuss this privately with the French and others as well. I mean, nuclear cooperation is still ongoing, and that area is extremely sensitive.
The Blue Team is now finding its stride. The coalition that had been bickering only moments earlier suddenly appears united. The Chancellor and his ministers tighten the economic screws, agreeing on a package of measures.
Termination of all remaining economic ties.
Frozen assets?
Yes. Suspension of visas for Russian business people.
Inspections of the shadow fleet.
Interdiction of Russian shipping.
Russian business people will no longer receive visas. Berlin ends all remaining energy ties with Russia, presses France to do the same, and pushes to make use of frozen Russian assets. The Blue Team also turns its attention to Russia's shadow fleet. These are aging oil tankers used to circumvent Western sanctions. They often sail without insurance, switching off their tracking systems, and have repeatedly appeared near sites where undersea cables in Europe have been damaged. The Blue Team decides to put a stop to that in the Baltic Sea. The intelligence chief takes the floor.
We can implement robust measures in the Baltic Sea to inspect shipping bound for Kaliningrad and St. Petersburg.
The Bundeswehr must put a stop to Russian piracy in the Baltic Sea.
Yes, indeed.
Within Germany's exclusive economic zone in the Baltic Sea, where Berlin has special jurisdiction, Russian tankers are to be systematically inspected. Shadow Fleet vessels will be stopped, searched, and turned back. If other Baltic countries, including Poland, the Baltic States, and Finland, join the effort, it would create a dense network of maritime controls. The Baltic Sea, however, is not only the theater of economic leverage. It is also of critical military importance. Russia's advance into Lithuania has a direct consequence. NATO's main land route into the Baltic States is now blocked. The Chancellor and the Inspector General of the Bundeswehr discuss what that means.
The key question is whether the corridor has been blocked in such a way that we can no longer move additional troops into Lithuania by land. That still needs to be assessed, because if that is the case, we would of course have to consider using sea routes as an alternative.
Couldn't you also airlift forces in?
Yes, absolutely. We have that capability. The question would then be, also from a broader NATO perspective, under what conditions those forces could actually land and where exactly we would deploy them. But transporting them there is not the issue.
Facing a blocked land route into Lithuania changes the equation for NATO. Reinforcements would now have to arrive by sea or air. The same routes would also be needed to evacuate civilians from the Baltic states, should that become necessary. But the Baltic Sea is just as important to Russia. St. Petersburg is Moscow's gateway to the Western Baltic Sea, while Kaliningrad, Russia's heavily militarized exclave, sits at its center. That is why the Blue Team wants NATO to establish full maritime control in the Baltic Sea, to ensure Allied forces can move freely while restricting Russia's ability to operate there.
As for A2AD, we would need a major electronic and air power response. From a NATO perspective, that is something we can manage, with capabilities such as the F-35. Our own Air Force assets would also be part of that. By then, we would already have our first F-35s in service, while the Tornadoes would still be operational.
A2AD stands for Anti-Access Area Denial. The idea is to make an area so heavily monitored and defended that an adversary can no longer operate without facing significant risk. In the Baltic Sea, that would mean combining radar, surveillance assets, fighter jets and air defense systems to restrict Russia's freedom of movement. The aim is to prevent Russian ships and aircraft from moving freely in the region. Germany could never achieve that on its own. It would require close coordination with the other NATO countries bordering the Baltic Sea, at least. Not all of these actors are represented in our war game, as the simulation focuses on German political decision-making. But throughout the simulation, the Blue Team assumes that NATO allies would implement these military measures together.
Overall, it is important that we view the Baltic Sea as a joint operational theater together with Finland and Sweden.
Having discussed land, air, and sea, the Inspector General now turns to a fourth domain, cyberspace. It is an area where Germany is already under attack, but where legal restraints leave it with only limited options to strike back.
I would like to come back to the cyber issue. At the moment, we are still operating in something of a legal grey zone. For example, the Bundeswehr is allowed to conduct reconnaissance right up to the password barrier. In other words, we know exactly where the targets are that we would want to strike, but we are not allowed to take action unless Parliament approves it. A state of tension is declared, and so on. So the real question is to what extent we should launch our own cyber campaign, disrupting and actively countering Russian operations.
In Germany, so-called hackbacks, offensive cyber operations against an attacker's infrastructure, have so far been largely prohibited. Even if authorities know where an attack originates, they generally cannot penetrate foreign servers, disrupt them, or stop an attack by technical means. A quick reminder. In our war game, Germany's savings bank's network has been hit by a major cyber attack. Experts are working around the clock to contain the damage. But striking back is not an option. The real German government under Chancellor Friedrich Merz is seeking to expand the powers of Germany's security agencies, including the possibility of more active cyber defense. But at the time of our war game and at the time of this recording, those powers have not yet become law. That's where Germany's constitutional Spannungsfall comes into play, the state of tension. It describes a state of external emergency in which an armed attack on Germany is considered likely. Declaring it activates an entire package of emergency laws and powers. In the war game, the defense minister therefore wants Parliament to declare a state of tension.
Given this situation, and with German troops in Lithuania, as well as many German citizens across the Baltic states potentially affected, I believe the time has come to ask Parliament to declare a state of tension.
The president of the Federal Office for Civil Protection is in favor.
I strongly support the defense minister's proposal to declare a state of tension. Host nation support means that hundreds of thousands of allied troops may have to move through Germany. That requires extensive civilian support, transport capacity, logistics, and many other services. We may even need to start preparing hospitals now. All of that takes time.
Host nation support means preparing Germany to receive and sustain Allied forces. If NATO invokes Article 5, hundreds of thousands of troops could move across German territory. In such a scenario, Germany would not necessarily sit on the front line, it would be NATO's logistical backbone. Allied forces would need fuel, accommodation, and supplies. Casualties might have to be treated in German hospitals. Declaring a state of tension would make much of that easier. It could, for example, allow the government to require parts of industry to prioritize production for the armed forces. But the political threshold to get this measure through parliament is high.
A state of tension requires a simple majority, right?
No, two-thirds.
A two-thirds majority in parliament is required. During Germany's previous legislative term, mainstream parties held that majority. Today, they do not. A government would need support from either the far-right AfD or far-left Die Linke to reach that necessary threshold. Those have so far been excluded from cooperation by most of the political mainstream, which means that any move in this direction holds considerable potential to cause a political stir.
How are you going to secure a majority?
If a state of tension cannot be declared, we can, through extensive cabinet work, activate 6 or 7 of the 10 laws linked to it individually, each with a simple majority.
The defense minister is working on a plan B in case parliament does not approve a state of tension. In that case, lawmakers could instead vote on individual emergency measures separately, each requiring only a simple majority. One example concerns Germany's civil protection legislation. Among other things, it regulates the obligations of public officials during a national emergency. An IT director at a federal agency, for example, could be required to remain in Germany and stay available for duty rather than travel abroad. In the war game, the German government decides to take the bigger step after all. It asks Parliament to declare a state of tension. It is now up to our white cell, the war game adjudication, to decide whether the measure succeeds. That role is performed by the German Wargaming Center at Helmut Schmidt University of the German Armed Forces in Hamburg. The measure succeeds. Inside the blue team's room, the government spokesperson receives a note informing her that Parliament has approved the measure.
I have just received an update. According to the news agencies, Parliament has narrowly approved the declaration of a state of emergency.
A sigh of relief goes through the blue team.
We can now begin stockpiling fuel, gas, and other essential supplies without any delay. On the civilian side, we're now waiting for NATO to invoke Article 5. That's when Allied troops would begin moving across Germany.
Is this a realistic development? Nico Lange, a security expert and former chief of staff at Germany's Ministry of Defense, thinks it is. He has been observing the war game from the sidelines in Hamburg and explains the reasoning behind it.
I don't think it's realistic to assume that simply because parties are now represented in parliament that essentially echo Russian foreign policy, there would be no constitutional majority for declaring a state of tension. People in Germany are not stupid. They see what's going on. They are adults. And if such an attack really occurred, nobody would be able to ignore it or to deny it.
Declaring a state of tension has far-reaching consequences, not only for the economy, but for society as a whole.
I have just coordinated with the defense minister. Just so everyone is clear, a state of tension automatically triggers conscription.
Declaring a state of tension automatically brings back conscription in Germany, with consequences for hundreds of thousands of people.
Breaking news from Berlin. All adult men in Germany are now once again subject to compulsory military service. Following Parliament's declaration of a state of tension, conscription, suspended for the past 15 years, automatically comes back into force. The Ministry of Defence says there will be no immediate call-up. Instead, preparations will begin to restart the medical examinations required for conscription. The right to conscientious objection remains unchanged.
Until 2011, conscription in Germany meant receiving a letter from the government, attending a medical examination, and, if found fit for service, being called up for military duty. Today, it would be impossible to process and mobilize entire age groups at short notice. Germany no longer has the infrastructure to do so. There are too few instructors, too little accommodation, and many of the local military recruitment offices have long since been closed. Even so, declaring a state of tension would mark the beginning of a broader mobilization. The government would start preparing the country and its workforce for the possibility of a prolonged conflict. As the finance minister points out,
I just want to point out, given the discussion about conscription, we may be facing economic losses in the coming months. Since we don't know how long the situation will last, I would reserve the option of imposing a budget freeze across all ministries later this year.
Let's briefly take stock. Russia has invaded part of Lithuania under the guise of a humanitarian operation. The Blue Team is now responding to that attack. The Chancellor and his ministers have agreed on sweeping economic measures, tightened control over shipping in the Baltic Sea, and taken steps to restrict Russia's military freedom of movement there. Parliament has also declared a state of tension. The Red Team knows nothing about these decisions yet. Around the table, the three men playing the Kremlin are preparing for different ways the Blue Team might respond to the invasion. The military chief now outlines a plan for further escalation.
As part of my planning, I have also prepared a detailed attack plan against Germany in case economic and diplomatic pressure fails to achieve the outcome we are seeking. I think we also need to make the German public understand just how vulnerable they would be to a Russian attack.
From the Red Team's perspective, everything hinges on one question. Will Germany emerge as the political and military driving force between a decisive NATO response?
From a military perspective, the main objective would be to destroy Germany's role as NATO's logistical hub.
Coming up in episode 4, the Russian team discusses which German cities they could target. Europe is weighing whether to confront Russia without the United States. And Germany faces a series of decisions about military escalation, including whether to sink a Russian warship. This was Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO inside a German war game? The series consists of 5 episodes, published weekly. Episode 4 will be out on 15th of July. If you have any questions or remarks, write us an email to wargame@welt.de. That's wargame@welt.de. Script and storytelling, Carolina Drüten and Antonia Beckermann. Production and sound design, Marvin Schwarz. Project leads, Antonia Beckermann, Carolina Drüten and Caroline Turzer. Research support, Jan Rosenkranz. Academic guidance, Josef Werbowski and Philipp Jan Schäfer from the German Wargaming Center at Helmut Schmidt University, the Bundeswehr University in Hamburg. Cover design, Dominik Schmidt. Our special thanks go to the participants of the wargame: David McAllister, Jörg Asmussen, Gerhard Konrad, Alexander Gabujew, Franz Stefan Gadi, Christiane Hoffmann, Roderich Kiesewetter, Bad Wome Kott, Arndt Freitag von Loringhofen, Oana Lungescu, Irene Mihalic, Jeff Radke, Michael Roth, Peter Tauber, Christoph Unger and Eberhard Zorn. We're grateful to the fellow journalists who lent their voices to the English language version of our German participants' quotes. Daniel Dillenböhmer, Stephanie Bolson, Francis Durnley, Henry Donovan, Jacob Eckstein, Philip Fritz, Eric Kirschbaum, Chris Lundy, Nicholas Potter, James Rothwell and Konstantin Schreiber. We would also like to thank the Helmut Schmidt University in Hamburg for providing the venue, as well as Alan Edwards, Marlene Badun, Tobias Grabow, Till Henniges, Karl Hufnagel, Elias Jakob, Thorsten Kodalle, Nico Lange and Wim Ort for their support on site. And Nana Brink, Kai Brinkmann and Nils Lange for their valuable contributions to the conceptual discussions.